Ball in Play 2, presented by DraftKings, kicks off on May 5th. Head over to the Warehouse Games channel to catch Game 1. Get some skin in the game and download the DraftKings app right now. Don't forget to use our promo code WAREHOUSE. That's promo code WAREHOUSE only at DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Bleeding Blue, a show about the New York Football Giants and its history. First time I've ever said it that way. My name is Justin Penick, alongside one of my best friends, Nikki Snacks. How are you?
I'm all right. You know, as good as can be.
Yeah.
How are you?
Good. Tired.
I'm fucking exhausted.
Yeah, we're recording this at 9:30. It's because we care and we love you, and we have one more episode reading the Big 50, and then next week we hopefully have an interview with the author of this book.
Well, if we don't, then that's just
hopefully do.
It's been set for a while, so
yes, it's been in the works.
So Patty should be on the show next week.
Gonna shoot the DM, slide in the DMs tomorrow, and
hey, you never know where that could lead to.
Never know. Okay, yeah, one more week at the Big 50. There's a lot of other chapters that we didn't get to. So still, like, really, and you know. Hey, we may continue reading this just on our own, and if you want to chat with us, we may do the Twitter Spaces and whatnot. But
if you guys are really engaging, and if you can't do it, I'll continue.
I mean, chapters we're not going to get to, and we'll probably talk about some more chapters that we didn't get to with Patty next week anyway. But we didn't get to the spoilers of perfection. We didn't get to the end of an 18-year championship drought. When is that? There were 30 years, 1986. Wonder when that was. Maybe it was a 18-year championship.
91 to 07.
Oh, that too. Look at that. Good math. Ahead of their time, Sam Huff, the fumble, the Eli Manning trade, Cappy. The Giants had another Superman who team owner Willie Tamara once described as number one player of the franchise's first 50 years of existence. That player was Mel Cappy Hine. Mel Hine.
Yeah.
Bad guy move for not knowing that. And see, I'm just so... I have PTSD that I just think that's... What's his face? Kevin Abrams.
Didn't you give me shit for...
Liam Neeson looks like shit.
Oh, my God. Wait.
So we're recording this Thursday, June 9th, and the Ranger game is on. I usually hate doing this, but Liam Neeson just looked like shit.
He looked really bad. That was really awful.
Sam Huff.
It looked like his soul was taken from him.
Ernie Accorsi. Chapter 17 is December 29, 2007, one of the best days of my life. Seeking to spoil... the greatest football game that I've ever been to. So there's 50 chapters in this book, the Big 50, we only touched on probably 20% of the book.
Well, we wanted to talk about really, you know, when we first started, the origins and a lot of the bigger figureheads in Giants history.
We've talked enough about the 07 team. We've talked enough about the 11 team.
Correct. And the
Eli,
Super Bowl. Exactly.
Like that.
Exactly. So we thought this was the right move, and I still agree with it.
Yeah. And what we are doing today is actually we're going to talk some Bill Belichick.
The what ifs.
What ifs. That's part of it. But also the great, awesome assistant coaches that the Giants have had,
which are still what ifs.
Bill Belichick, we're going to start off with him. We're going to go into Vince Lombardi. We're going to go into a little bit of Tom Landry, too. And then I kind of want to hear some of your thoughts on Sean Payton. Sean Payton's not in the Big 50.
He's not.
But he's worth mentioning as a significant assistant Giants coach.
And then we'll finish off with Romeo Crennel.
Rest in peace.
Well, he's not dead. He just retired.
Rest in peace.
I agree. We're not going to talk about Romeo Crennel.
I have a question for you just about Bill Belichick's legacy in general, just as a football coach, not even Giants coach.
Yeah.
What is he without Tom Brady?
Wow. Great question. Loaded question. And I think that's a question that a lot of people have been asking. I want to say I think he would still find a way to be a great coach. I don't think he has the rings that he has or the success that he has. Because you got to think about it, too. The Browns were a dumpster fire. He came in. He was starting to turn that team around before he got...
I think he would have done it.
That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. he was on the precipice of doing that turnaround with the Cleveland Browns, but he never really had the full chance to do it.
Right.
Did he luck into Brady? Maybe. But he also drafted Brady.
And you can also say, like, no, that they drafted him in the sixth round.
Right.
And then they got their guy.
Yes, and until Brady won that Super Bowl with Tampa, he left. You could have said, what's Brady without Belichick
right.
in that system?
Right, because we were seeing Brady's arm decline and everything like that. So, I mean, in a way, a couple years ago, you're right, the questions were reversed.
Exactly. So and then
he said, fuck you.
He did say, fuck you, and terrific time. But with that Tampa team, too, by the way, like,
yeah.
that was the probably most skilled team I've ever seen.
Yeah. Offensively and defensively, they were insane.
I was just going to say, it wasn't just one way. It
wasn't just the offense, wasn't just the wide receivers.
Right,
so.
Right. They had a running game, they had an offensive line, they had weapons, they had everything.
Yeah.
They had pass rushing, they had everything.
Yeah.
So if he didn't win that, I would have been a little bit surprised.
And I think we're going to eventually look back at Bill Belichick's coaching legacy and differentiate it from Bill Belichick, the executive, and Bill Belichick, the coach.
He's a shitty executive.
Because, and somehow that team last year with Mac Jones, somewhat of a stable quarterback situation, we'll see what the offense looks like this year without Josh McDaniels. Rooting for Joe Judge, by the way. Rooting for Joe Judge to get a play call.
Unbelievable that he really might be the offense coordinator.
You know what? Yeah. Fuck it. I know we're on a history show, but this is kind of related to Bill Belichick. Do you want Joe Judge to call the offensive plays this year?
Without a doubt.
And you want him to succeed?
Of course I do. I love Joe. We've been on this show praising Joe Judge to the gods.
Yeah. No, but there's a lot of people who like probably don't want him to succeed. Like, oh, fuck him. He destroyed us, blah, blah, blah.
You know, anybody that thinks that's a fucking asshole, first of all, because, listen, no, he didn't have the success that we thought. But when we were 6-10 and we up until the last week of the season and we needed the Eagles to beat the Redskins or whatever the fuck their team name is. Fuck!
Tampa just got a goal.
Anyway, we were all singing his praises. We were all right. Am I right or wrong?
That echoed throughout the entire world.
That was crazy. You heard that. Yeah, you heard that.
but you're right. So.
We're all singing his praises. This is some Lord and say, okay, we're on the right track. We're on the right track. We're on the right track. And then an abysmal year. But can we also note the fact that the man never had a chance?
No.
He was handpicked as offensive coordinator, and it was known.
He did not get to handpick his offensive coordinator.
Okay, you're right. He was given his offensive coordinator. He was forced on Jason Garrett. Or Jason Garrett was forced on him.
Yeah.
He was not in step line with the general manager, which always should be the case.
Yeah.
Right?
And LPG just came on Talking Giants and said that, like, Dave Gettleman, like, everybody shut Joe Judge out.
They shut him out.
Towards the latter half of the 2021 season.
He wasn't able to...
And he was promised time.
He didn't get that. He wasn't able to choose his quarterback.
Yeah.
So all these things were stacked against him.
Yeah.
All of them. And then his quarterback gets hurt in, what, week 9 last year? And they were just an absolute shit
show. He had one game without Jason Garrett, and they won that game.
Uh-huh. Regardless, Joe Judge, it is history now, so I could say he never had a fair shot. So any Giant fan is going to show
Joe
Judge.
And I think that's known. But, like, right now, I hope he gets the play-calling duties. I hope it's not fucking Matt Patricia. Like really. And I'm saying this as an unbiased football fan. Who would you rather have calling your offensive plays?
Joe Judge.
Matt Patricia or former special teams coordinator Joe Judge? I think I would just say...
Wide receivers coach, too.
I would just say Joe Judge simply because it's not Matt Patricia.
And you could argue Matt Patricia was a bigger disgrace than Joe Judge.
You could say Matt Patricia versus anybody, and I would go with anybody calling offensive plays.
How do you go from defensive coordinator from, like,
I don't know.
4 years ago to...
How do you go from special teams coordinator? I know he's a wide receivers coach, stuff like that, but, I mean, what they're doing in New England, it's kind of funky. But I am rooting for Joe Judge. Like, I am 100% rooting for Joe Judge to call the... And the way that he's going to show that he is...
He's going
to
run the football.
Hey, I mean, that's what they did last year. That's what the Patriots did last year. Damien Harris, that's what they just
ran.
Didn't
they win 10 games, 11 games?
They won a lot of games. Yeah. And so that's the initial point that I kind of, why I started this whole thing on Joe Judge is that even last year, with him being a bad executive, them drafting really fucking weird and really funky, but the thing is that they get these contributions out of these UDFAs because they coach these guys up. Yeah. So, yeah, even if these guys are funky and even though they can't draft a wide receiver to save their life, it's because Joe Judge left as wide receivers coach.
I agree.
that's why they haven't been able to develop wide receivers. But neither here nor there, this coach is just able to coach these guys up. So that's, again, the question of Bill Belichick without Tom Brady, Tom Brady without Bill Belichick, it's going to continue to be answered. But here's my take on it. Here's my take on it. I still think Bill Belichick has 2 to 4 Super Bowls.
Without Brady.
Without Brady.
Yeah.
It's just not in the large spurts that it came in maybe the early 2000s. I think it's spread out.
It wouldn't be a dynasty.
No, I think it's spread out. It may be a dynasty by the time it's all said and done, and maybe in one quarterback's career. But I think it's spread out a little bit, and it's not so hyper-centered in the early 2000s.
Now, yeah, I agree. Now, think about it. You had Tom Brady that comes out who, I mean, he was a 6th-round pick.
Yeah.
His combine was atrocious. He was like a backup quarterback in Michigan. He had a handful of starts. You mean to tell me that Brady's development had nothing to do with coaching and the way in the scheme that he was in? Belichick couldn't find somebody like that, like a Brady,
and coach him
the same way?
Yeah.
So I right now, as I stand right here, to me, you know how I feel about coaching. You know how I feel about coaching. I think coaching is the most important thing in football, even besides, unless you're Pat Mahomes or something. Like coaching, I think, with Josh Allen made him what he is today.
I think the offensive play caller is the third most important position in the game of football.
Right,
it's quarterback,
exactly.
Left tackle, offensive play caller. Bobby says it's quarterback, offensive play caller, left tackle. So he puts offensive play caller above left tackle. I say left tackle is more important.
And I agree with you. But we're all in agreement that is the top three things that are important in NFL offense or on a team.
Yeah.
But I also think we're in agreement that Belichick, the coach, is just superior.
Yeah. I don't know if he's viewed as the ultimate GOAT without Brady, but he is still viewed as one of the best head coaches of all time because he's a multiple Super Bowl champion.
Yes.
Probably definitely stays with one team.
And I also think, now that we're a Giants history podcast, I also think he 100% gets a lot of credit for those Giants defenses.
And
that
I think
won
he should. It actually bothers me. We're actually going to be doing an America's Game movie review in 2 weeks, and we recorded 1987. There was no mention of Bill Belichick.
Which is nuts.
That's something that America's Game, that they kind of only mention the three people that are being talked about as like the central characters, which makes sense, but...
Like in 07, they don't mention Spags. Like,
no, which they should. So here's we're going to get into the Big 50.
Let's do it.
What's this chapter called? The Brilliance of Bill Belichick. The Brilliance of Bill Belichick.
I'm brilliant.
Generally, when you're a coach, and this is Harry Carson talking about Bill Belichick, generally when you're a coach, you probably have played the position and can, from your personal experiences, understand what a player might be thinking or how he's going to react in certain situations. Because Bill had never played linebacker, I think there were times in your head where you thought, well, what does he know about playing linebacker? He never played the game. Carson remembered those early days going into the meeting room with Belichick and how the coach would draw plays for the defense to practice. We'd look at what he put up on the board and we'd go, nah, Bill, I don't think that's going to work. But then we'd go out on the field and we'd start to run the defense as he drew it up and it would work. We also started to realize that he thought differently than a traditional linebacker. I mean, he was much more into putting players in certain positions, so he won us over because of the things he did, helped us to become a much better defense.
I tell you, I love the fact that Harry Carson starts by saying, typically when you don't play the game.
Yeah.
But then when you're seeing like everything, it's almost like that's a bad example. I was going to use Herb Brooks and Miracle, but you never seen Miracle. So
no.
I mean, the majority
of people have seen it, and I'll just shake my head and agree with
you. Yeah, which is just going to lead to zero conversation. But Herb Brooks during the 1980... Jesus Christ.
Season.
Julian Edit. No, it's the World Cup. The World Cup when the U.S. is playing the Soviets.
Sure.
And Herb Brooks is like this crazy, crazy man, and he's doing all these X's and O's, and in the movie, they're like, what? But when they go out and do it, and it's working, all of a sudden they come back, and Herb Brooks is still doing all the X's and O's, and blah, 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 going like this, and then they're like, Got it. And they're all like well-oiled machines, and they go out, and everything is so smooth. So when Harry Carson is saying like that's what it reminds me of.
Yep. And this leads me to my next point. But George Martin says, well, for one, Bill Parcells has a personality. Belichick has no personality. He really doesn't. He's an X's and O's man, period. I think he wrote a book 1 year, and he talked about how he had to put his personal life on hold during the season. So there have been plenty of people that have tried to replicate what Bill Belichick does.
I mean, we could rip him off, right? Eric Mangini.
We just talked about one.
Matt Patricia,
Joe Judge. You know,
I don't think Judge. Tried
to replicate. Yeah, we literally just gave him excuses as to why it's okay, and we're still rooting for him. But you know, still, he's one of them where it didn't work. You know, I guarantee if Bill Belichick walked in that situation, he would have somehow made it work. Right?
And it's so funny to me about. I'm sorry. Please hold that thought because I think I know what you're going to say. That the greatest football coach right now, ever, has the worst coaching tree of all time.
Yeah, that is true. According to him, during the season, there is no daddy, there are no birthdays or funerals. There are no disruptions. I think it's all football, and he was consumed by football. Whereas Parcells, I think he understood that people are human and that there are going to be things that, believe it or not, are more important than football. You know, and at the end of the day, I mean, he got results. You know, and what about Belichick's meshing with the personality in the Giants' locker rooms? That's easy, George Martin said. It worked well because it yielded results. If it didn't yield results,
it would have been off.
It wouldn't fucking work, and that's with anything in life.
Literally,
if you don't get results, then it's just not going to work. But
correct.
Bill Belichick, wherever he has gone, has gotten results.
Yep, and that's why he's as superior of a coach as anybody.
Yeah,
and it pisses me off so much. I don't know if you have another point to go on this, but the fact that he was the defensive coordinator for two of the now, which defense do they say is better, the 90 or 86?
More LT was better in 86.
Well, LT was MVP in 86.
Well,
so.
How about this? People comment or in the chat, which if you were, you know, if you're around, which defense do you think is better? We may even put up a poll.
Yeah, I would. You know,
it's a good idea to put up a poll.
It's a good question.
You can maybe say that the 86 was more talented. You still had George Martin around. You're talking about LTs being 4 years younger.
Harry Carson.
Harry Carson.
86?
Yes, I'm sorry. Harry Carson was still floating around.
But then 90, you bring in Banks. You have Leonard Marshall.
No, Banks was on 86.
No, he wasn't.
He was drafted in 84, okay. So he was there. Two-time Super Bowl champ.
Oh, all right. I take that back.
Bad guy move.
Listen.
Not you. But I think 1990, what Patty writes about is the Super Bowl 25 game plan. I think 1990, that group was just better coached. Well coached. 86 was just naturally more talent. That's when you have LT going off for 20 and a half sacks.
George Martin's still at the top of his game.
George Martin's still there. Yeah. He had that, you know, the crazy awesome interception return against John Elway during the regular season. So this is Bill Belichick's defense's points allowed ranking by year.
This is unbelievable.
1985 to 1990. 1985, fifth. 1986, second. 1987, 13th. That was the year that there was a strike, I believe.
Yes, yeah, so it doesn't count.
That was the 1987 season where it was a strike and Giants players just didn't show up in a shortened season, whatever. 1988, ninth. Bad year. 1989, second. 1990, first. So the 2 years that they won a Super Bowl, 1986, second. 1990, first.
So maybe we just answered our own question.
Well, I mean, at that point, I mean, between first and second, you're...
No,
you're,
I know. And I feel bad that I didn't really mention Banks in 86. He was still young, and he was overshadowed by LT and Carson. 1990 was when Carson was gone, Carl Banks really blossomed.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's where he took off. And then Leonard Marshall was... Leonard Marshall in 1990. So that's a really, I really want to, we got to put that to a poll.
Yeah, put that to a poll. So comment, I say 86.
I'm going to go 90.
Okay, 1990 is just better. You could say that 1990 is just more impressive from Bill Belichick.
Fair, yes. And I'm not even going based on the points per game rankings. I just, maybe it's more recent and I know a couple more of the guys, but I don't know. I'm going to go 90.
So this is actually something that
And I'm also going to go 90 because, I'm sorry, real quick.
Yeah.
Because that Super Bowl, what they did to the Buffalo Bills offense.
Well, yeah, yes. But I think that's more, like I said, that's more impressive of what Bill Belichick, the mind of Bill Belichick, rather than the actual defense.
True.
So.
Yeah, that's true. All right, the offense held the ball for 45 minutes, so that works.
That is true. So, defense forces those three downs.
Yes, we did talk about that.
So I'm going to read you something that the first thing that I thought of is let Mario Manningham beat us.
Uh-huh. It's still a Nixon Cruz game.
Yep. The game plans he put together were for the 90 percentile of players. And if that one player found himself in an unfortunate situation, he'd say, look, we can protect everything but this play. If this happens, then they caught us off guard. But this is as much yardage as they should make on a play like this. So when I read that quote, I'm thinking of him telling his defense, it's a Cruz and Knicks game, like you said, let Mario Manningham beat us.
And
that's exactly what they fucking did.
Crazy. And it's like, it's kind of, I mean, when you think about it, isn't that kind of what he did in the Super Bowl in 1990?
Yeah, just let I mean it was
well, I mean
Thurman Thomas is a great player, but let Thurman Thomas beat you on the ground versus as the explosive plays.
As if Jim Kelly and
yes.
Oh God, what's the receiver's name?
Andre Reed.
Don't let them beat you, because when you have explosive plays like that, you're gonna let up
kills
points.
You.
Right.
Kills
exactly.
Because you know, that's all that Buffalo Bills team did. Yes. Patty actually includes some stats. So the Bills had scored 66 out of 72 red zone trips, with 48 of those scores being touchdowns. The Bills' offense, which had scored 95 points in two playoff games, presented a pick-your-poison dilemma for Belichick and the Giants. Thurman Thomas finished with 1,297 rushing yards. So, I mean, that was just an insane, insane year that they had. 1990, the Bills' offense, Jim Kelly, they were led. League's best-scoring offense, averaging 26.8 points per game.
That's so many for back then, I feel like.
That's almost four touchdowns.
Yeah, it's crazy. That's like, per game. What is it, like 30 now? 31 is the average now?
No.
Not the average, but.
Fuck, Giants fucking averaged, like, you want here.
I'm not talking about the Giants. I'm talking about a regular football
you
team.
So, here's a.
You think I'm talking about the miserable fucking Giants
2021
nowadays?
2021 New York Giants.
I'll say 17.1.
How much they averaged this year per game?
I think that's high.
Let's see. How much did they average per game this year? Team stats, points for, 258. All right, so I got it.
Yeah, just
258 divided by 17. How much did you say?
17.1.
The 15.1. All right, so you know
I got
what?
0.1.
I thought it was actually less. I'm going to be
honest. That's so embarrassing. That's so embarrassing.
Yeah, so the 1990 Buffalo Bills in a game that's 30-some years ago averaged 26.8.
Yeah,
so.
And you know, we praise Bill Parcells at nauseam, and I think deservedly so, no?
Yes.
But Bill Belichick, my gosh.
Yeah.
Do the Giants win those two Super Bowls if Bill Belichick isn't their defense coordinator?
Yeah, maybe not.
Maybe not, right?
Especially with the, you know, thinking about the game in a certain way that, you know, lets those linebackers be like the modern day edge rushers.
Yes.
That was the start of that. So good for
Bill.
Good for Bill Belichick.
Yes. And it's the one that got away. I want to just say real quick. They did, ESPN did a, I think it was like Bill and Bill or something
yes.
like that. You
yes.
really have to watch this.
I know I haven't watched it.
So the whole story, like Parcells retired, and this is when Belichick is like a really hot commodity. And if I'm saying this wrong, I'm going to get the gist of it, but if I'm saying it wrong, please eviscerate me and correct me. But Parcells was like, I mean, he was up in the air about retiring or not.
Yeah.
And Belichick was going to take over. And they talk about this in the documentary. So Belichick takes the Browns job, thinking and not knowing that Parcells, you know, thinking Parcells is going to come back to the Giants for another year.
And George Young also, he says in the Big 50 that George Young didn't think Belichick fit New York. So
correct.
It's partially why maybe he was out of the loop on all this.
Maybe. Fair. But I still think to this day Belichick gets the job if Parcells retires. I don't know. I really do. I know George Young says it.
We'll ask Patty her opinion on that.
Okay, fine.
I think that's like, hey, we really think that he would have got the job, but you're saying that George Young wasn't willing. What do you think
talked to? So what year was that? 90?
It was 1990.
It was the year after. Yeah.
It's crazy how they won a fucking Super Bowl. And now, if Parcells has health issues, fine. Like, if you have health issues, it's legitimate, right?
I always thought Parcells lied about that. Now looking back on it.
He got surgery.
I know he got the bypass. I get it all. Take a year off. But the fact that what he does and comes back, I don't know. I think
we see coaches all the time get like surgery. Urban Meyer, Mike Zimmer almost went blind.
Yes, I know. And I'm not
coaching teams for years.
I'm not calling Parcells a liar. I think in watching that, I was not alive. I don't know what happened. But in watching that DVD, all I know is that Bill Belichick wanted so badly to be the coach of the New York Giants.
Yeah.
And he waited out as long as he possibly could for Parcells' decision.
Yeah.
And he thought, and what was said in the documentary essentially was, Parcells is telling him, I'm gonna coach another year.
Yeah.
So Belichick takes the job. And then I think a couple weeks later, Parcells steps down. Health issues. Okay.
Yep.
Fine. So to me, I think there was something there where Belichick thought he would get the job if Parcells stepped
down. Sure he did. And my theory is that, my theory is that George Young just, they didn't let him know. That's my theory. You all right?
Yeah, I got allergies. My ears always itch and my eyes hurt. But
that happens. Okay. That happens when I have headphones on.
Maybe it's the headphones. I don't know.
Yeah, because then you feel like you have earwax, but you actually don't.
I don't have any earwax. No, I wash my ears all the time. But okay, maybe that's the case. However, Belichick literally The only football team that he has any respect for outside of the Patriots
is the Giants.
It's the Giants.
And he gets emotional.
He cried in the video.
Yeah.
He wanted to, when they walk back in there, he's looking at it, he goes.
That's the one clip I've seen.
Yeah. Like, he wanted to be the Giants coach so bad. Yeah. And to me, it's just, yes, it's revisionist history, but.
We'll ask Patty. She'll clarify.
I think I want that to be our first question, like how.
Okay.
The dynamic of the Bill relationship and if Bill Belichick.
Well, also, it's George Young, too. It's George Young and Wellington Nara. It's not just Bill and Bill.
Right.
It's. Bill Belichick and Wellington Mara and George Young.
Yeah, and Wellington hired Parcells as a players coach, right?
Yes.
That's how he hired him.
Yeah.
Was he going to switch from that and hire a hard ass that Belichick probably was, even though Parcells finished his career as a hard ass? So yeah. There's a lot of questions that I want answered when Patty comes on.
You want to know another assistant coach who cried thinking about getting a Giants job, the head of coaching job?
Oh, this one hurts.
Any question about whether Vince Lombardi truly wanted to coach the Giants was answered during one of my recent conversations with Mo, and this was Andy Rubistelli.
Rubistelli,
yes,
great Italian,
an Italian name. Andy Rubistelli was commenting on whether Vince Lombardi wanted to be a coach of the Giants or not. We played Green Bay in a preseason game one year. He remembers Andy Rubistelli and I. Oh, I guess this is Mo. Okay. Oh, yeah, Mo. We were walking around downtown Green Bay, and a car pulls up. It's Lombardi. Get the hell in, he says. He starts talking about how he wished he was coaching the Giants, and he was in tears. I should have been there coaching you guys, he said. He was crying in the car.
Damn.
There's something about this fucking organization that just drives people crazy.
What are the Maras putting these guys' meals?
It's a shame we weren't around to see that. No, I mean you were around. I mean, in all seriousness, though, like the 2000 season was the first season that you really were rooting for it. And I always go back to like thinking about the class of the Giants organization. I always go back to 9/11, seeing what they did after 9/11. I love reading those stories and I love experiencing that. You even see the thing that they did with Kyle Rudolph. So I think the Giants the last couple of years have showed misplaced class to players that necessarily don't deserve it. Does he deserve that class? But so you see it in moments, but you actually saw it when like Wellington was alive, that it's like, this is actually how you do it. And that's what people gravitate towards.
And that's why, to this day, even though we've been decimated by atrocity of front offices, that people still have respect for the team because it's all class.
Yep.
And the fact that we have, we were just talking about Belichick being the greatest coach of all time. The trophy that everybody plays for is named after the man that was just crying that wanted to be the coach of the New York Giants.
That is true.
So can you imagine the impression that leaves?
You talked about what if, about Belichick. Well, I want you to really let this sink in about the what if about Vince Lombardi, right? So Wellington Mara didn't feel comfortable forcing Jim Lee Howell to retire early.
Of course he didn't.
So you win a couple championships, the coordinator, the head coach is the head coach, coordinators are coordinators, you can find another coordinator, right? That's a thought process.
You could.
Running back Kyle Rote had made an observation about the Giants coaching staff. One day, he was walking down the hall into a room, and this is from a Big Blue View article, not from the Big 50.
Okay.
He was walking down the hall and into a room to his right was Lombardi breaking down film with his offensive players. Down the hall to the left was Landry going over situations with his defensive players. And then down the hall into another room was Howell reading a newspaper. Howell's job was to be the diplomatic leader between the boisterous Lombardi and the mild-tempered Landry. Oh, yeah. And be the team's head coach. What did Jim Lee Howell do?
He did the crossword puzzle in the New York Post.
Hey, how'd the meeting go?
So you had...
Hey, Vince, how'd the meeting go?
Two of the greatest coaches in NFL history. Arguably top three.
Yes.
Arguably.
Yeah.
In different offices, coaching their players.
Mm-hmm.
While a guy who is the head coach...
Smoking
a cigarette, doing a crossword puzzle.
Maybe he was a cigar guy. I don't know.
Reading about Prohibition or whatever the fuck was then.
It's not Prohibition.
Yeah, but the Recession.
It was the 50s. Was there a war?
World War II ended.
No, it was a long time ago.
Was it the Korean War, maybe?
Maybe. You getting up
but
there?
But that's what if?
Reading about cars. Cars were big.
Fuck cars. I don't care about cars. What if? It really, Just what if?
Yeah.
Even if you picked one of them and one of them had to go.
It didn't take long for Lombardi to make his mark, not only on the franchise, but on the run game itself. He created a new blocking style that he called running the daylight. There's like a Vince Lombardi documentary where he's drawing on the chalkboard. And this guy goes here, into the alley. Instead of an offensive lineman blocking a single player head-on and sending the running back through a predetermined hole, Lombardi's scheme called for blocking a specific area similar to zone blocking and leaving the running back to choose which hole to exploit. And Tom Landry was also one of the first to create the 4-3-4 defense and really center a defense around the middle linebacker, which that middle linebacker was Sam Huff. So Tom Landry had a big part in making Sam Huff one of the greatest defense players of all time. And Vince Lombardi also had a huge factor into making Frank Gifford the type of player that he was. Because besides being an innovator, Lombardi also had an eye for talent. It was his idea to convert flanker slash safety Frank Gifford into a full-time halfback.
Yeah, that's so cool. I love that. I love the term flanker. We used to use that in like 7th and 8th grade football. Flanker. Yeah. But it blows my mind that those two guys are on the staff at the same time and neither one of them are the head honcho.
And I have a story here. This is also from the Big Blue View article. But
tell me. Tell our audience.
There was a story that Lombardi actually got a job while he was offense coordinator with the Giants. He got a job to be the head coach of the Eagles, but he did not take it because the Eagles were currently in the process of being sold. And Willington Mara was like, listen, you could take this job, but your job security isn't safe, and also you would not have full control and autonomy of what players you would want to bring in and stuff like that. So he declined the job, still with the hopes that one day he would get the Giants job, and he continued being the coordinator for the Giants. And it was actually a good move because the Eagles were sold and they were bought by somebody new. So who knows if he would have, you know, he probably would have been bumped down the coordinator again.
I didn't know that part.
Yeah. Not in the Big 50. I wanted to do some of the research for this to talk about Vince Lombardi. So,
well, I mean, so Landry to me he's kind of not the one that got away.
No, because he legitimately got his job with the Dallas. They were not the Cowboys at the time. They moved on to be the Cowboys eventually, but he got his job and everything like that. But it's Lombardi Lombardi is the one you circled, the one that got away.
Yes, correct, and especially the emotions that he had felt. And in reading the book and that you see.
Yeah.
Well, or, you know, that you read. That's the one.
Yeah.
That's the one. And it's unbelievable that I still can't get over that. Just having that part just makes me laugh so much.
Yeah.
Lombardi's putting up, he's, you know, helping his offensive players draw up schemes here, and Landry's in the other room.
Jim Lee Howell's
in the newspaper.
Yeah.
Like, motherfucker, are you kidding me?
Yeah, and what's crazy, too, so Vince Lombardi, while he was coordinator for the Giants for a couple years, he was employed by the Federal Bank and the Trust Company in Manhattan as an executive during the offseason. Eventually, after he does not take the Eagles' head coaching job, Willington Mara makes him the highest-paid assistant coach in the National Football League to, you know, encourage him to stay, and he's paid accordingly. Tom Landry also, while he's also being a defense coordinator, for a couple years during his playing days, he was defensive coordinator and a secondary player, defensive back as well. So he did both. And then he retired, and then he was just obviously the defense coordinator.
Yeah.
But he actually got, like, embarrassed. And, you know, part of what Patricia Traynor writes in the Big 50 is that Landry's humiliation against Max Speedy taught him a valuable lesson about coaching, and that was to prepare for every possible little nuance that might arise in a game. In his autobiography, Landry wrote, "I learned as a defensive back that it wasn't enough for me to react to the movement of the ball. By the time I saw where the ball was being thrown and tried to get there, it would be too late to try and stop the play." So Landry created a defense that was focused on reading keys. For example, if a halfback went in one direction, Landry surmised that the play would take shape as one of the two possible options would lay out of those options for his teammates to stop the opponent. Let's actually see this. Landry was in fact so demanding of his players on defense that he once chewed out Frank Gifford, who at the time was also contributing on defense during a film session in which Landry pointed out that Gifford had been out of position on an interception that he returned for a touchdown.
Frank Gifford.
And that's one of these things about Landry and Vince Lombardi. You know, I told you that Lombardi had a job, right? And I told you that Landry was also playing at the same time. Where a lot of these guys, they would have like their Monday through Friday jobs during this time, and then they would play football on, you know, Sunday or whatever, right?
Right.
One of the thing that made these two guys great, that made them the greatest of all time, and that really set the game up in a direction that it is now, is that they were so psychotic about preparing and their preparation.
Their detail.
Yeah.
Their attention to detail, yes.
Yeah, and I think there's a story, you know, that I was reading that might have been about Landry, whereas if you had a physical mistake, he got it.
Fine.
If you had a mental mistake, he would perceive that as you just don't have the mental capacity to understand what's going on here. Therefore, you're not for me.
Right.
Which, that's fucking cold.
It's,
but
it's very cold because, I mean, you think about it, physical mistakes are, it could cost you even, well, I guess it goes
tomato,
one way
tomato.
Tomato, tomato, yeah. But I, see, I love that.
And they were one, and I, it could be hindsight to say this, but I think to take it to the level that they did, they were one of the first to really do that.
They were the innovators of it.
Yeah.
Like, if you're not mentally in it, that means you're not paying attention to what I'm saying in the room.
Not just man versus man. And this is offense and defense. Not just man versus man. You got him on offense, defense. It was, you know, Vince Lombardi. No, I'm going to create something that's going to create space.
Yes.
Tom Landry. I'm going to create something that is centered around, you know, one of the most talented players on my football team, a middle linebacker that has to control everything, but also preventing offenses from going to a place that they want to go. I'm going to prevent that, not just mano y mano.
Exactly. And if the player is not doing that, then it's mental, and then you're not listening to me, so get out.
Yeah.
So I can totally understand where they're coming from, where they'd rather a mentally fortitude-minded guy over, you know, a physical specimen.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Belichick is like, too, because that's how...
He drafts weird.
He drafts weird. He drafts guys that he's like, okay... This guy, I interviewed him, and he works like this. He ticks like this.
Yeah.
I tick like that. He knows exactly what I want. I want him. Yeah. I don't want the freak from Alabama. I want the moron from North Dakota State.
Yeah.
So it's just these coaches, man, and the lineage of wild. No, I don't want to say wild. The lineage of Giants assistant coaches that we've had from our inception.
Yeah.
And what they've gone on to be. Is nuts.
And there's even Sean Payton, who we're not going to talk about. I wanted to.
No.
There's even Sean Payton.
Sean Payton, to me, that's...
He's not really... Is he one that got away? Because it eventually ended in Tom Coughlin.
We talked about this. It's a very... I want to... You know what? Maybe we could start a conversation in Spaces or on the Bleeding Blue Twitter account. I don't think he's a one that got away because Tom Coughlin won two Super Bowls.
Yeah.
But I also do want to know what Sean Payton could have done with Eli.
Yeah.
Tom Coughlin wasn't a quarterback whisperer. Sean Payton was known to be like an offensive guru.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I also would have loved unbiased football opinion. He went to the Cowboys from 03 to 05.
That's who really fucked up the Cowboys.
As a QB coach.
Yes.
I would have loved to see what Sean Payton did with Tony Romo. And not Jason Garrett.
It's fair. Tony Romo was really good.
I mean, Jason Garrett was the next in line because Sean Payton was the QB. What a fucking disgrace.
He
went from the offensive coordinator to the Giants to the QB coach of the Cowboys, and they had that fuckhead Jason Garrett call in plays, and he was the one who got promoted at the end of the day.
It worked out for us.
Worked out for the Saints. Who didn't it work out for?
The Cowboys.
Cowboys, yeah.
When was the last time Cowboys won a Super Bowl?
VCRs were around.
Yeah, beepers too. Mm. And you know who wasn't around?
One of my good friends, Michael Boker.
You too.
Yeah, I was not around, no.
When were you born?
98.
Yeah, you weren't around?
Nope.
You fucking loser, Cowboy fans. You fucking losers. You know who else wasn't around?
Who?
Our miserable, rotten editor, Julian.
Ah, that's true. Yeah, he's younger than all of us.
No, but Sean Payton is something that I do want to bring up when we talk about this in Spaces. I think that's a good conversation
because yeah,
a lot of the people are you know, around my age, you know, a lot of people your age too, but everybody knows Sean Payton.
Yeah.
He's more recent. So I do think that would be a good...
And there were some funky things that happened between him and Fossil.
Yes.
Him and Fossil kind of butted heads.
Yes.
And he had play calling duties for a little bit, but then Fossil
took
him back
away.
And then it didn't work. So we'll talk all about that. But that's another element that we have yet to explore. And but that's going to do it.
Yes. And John Fox, too, by the way, who's a Super Bowl winning coach.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, fucking. He was a defense coordinator. God, yes. What a.
He's somebody I don't hold him in high as regards as Sean Payton. Yeah, he was a great coach for a while.
All right, that's going to do it for this week. We will see you next week. That is it. That is the truth. We will see you next week with hopefully a Patricia Train interview.
I mean, if we don't, then
we may die.
Just I'll kill sense. Justin on air.
There you go.
All right. Oh no, wait, that's bad. Bleep that out.
No.
FBI. No. I don't give a fuck. Whatever.
They've come after you before. Keep on bleeding blue. It's next.
Fuck TV.
Ball in Play 2, presented by DraftKings, kicks off on May 5th. Head over to the Warehouse Games channel to catch Game 1. Get some skin in the game and download the DraftKings app right now. Don't forget to use our promo code WAREHOUSE. That's promo code WAREHOUSE only at DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours.